Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist, and I'd like to welcome you to our show. Tonight is Thursday, December 11th, and it's 6 o'clock Eastern Time, so if you're listening right now, you're listening live. And if you are listening, we'd love to have you call in with your questions or comments, and let me give you that number. It's 1-718-766-4332. And let me say, we've already had a caller tonight that I was talking with before we started the show, and the call dropped. I'm not sure if she hung up or if somehow we were disconnected or something happened with Blog Talk Radio. So if you're still listening, I'm sorry about that. That was not intentional. If you want to call me back, you can. But we weren't talking about what tonight's show was or the topic of tonight's show. But, again, we'd love to have any of your questions, and then we'll somehow kind of direct that back to what the topic is tonight.
Well, gee, Laura, what did you say to her?
Kate's here.
I'm here. I actually was here when it started.
Oh, you were. I didn't get the little Kate's here
the thumbs up with the phew, she made it. Yes, I'm here.
Well, I am glad. No, she was just had some good questions about expressive language and speech development. Her little boy is 27 months old. He probably has between 50 and 75 words, which, again, is kind of at the lower range of what we would like. But she's had him evaluated by her state's early intervention program, and they did not qualify him for services. And she said one challenge that she has is that he doesn't always pronounce words correctly, and his name is Landon, and so we can't pronounce the L, and so people don't know what he's saying. So I talked to her about L being a later consonant sound, that some kids don't get that until closer to four, although a lot of two-year-olds have it, but it's not uncommon for you to have difficulty with an L sound, even, you know, up to about age four and a half. And then the second thing she said is that he uses lots of very non-specific words. And she said that he'll say this, you know, like this, what's this? And so she's doing the right thing. She's labeling what things are, and he tries to repeat her. But, again, his sound system isn't very mature yet, so he's pretty hard to understand. So I referred her to the website. And if you're new to our show or don't know what that is, I have a website. It's teachmetotalk.com, and it's full of articles on there about language development in toddlers, receptive language, what kids understand, expressive language, what they say, and as well as some other topical kinds of things, which we're going to talk about tonight.
And really great stuff about what you do, which I think is rare,
yeah,
because we like to complain. Lots of people talk about the theory and, you know, what are the milestones, and they don't necessarily get around to telling you, so what do you do? And you put it
right
in really family-friendly terms that people understand. And, of course, better than that is showing it with your video. So check out the website.
Oh, I'm sorry. You cut out. What was that last thing you
said?
Oh,
I just said check out the website because they can see clips of the video and also get the suggestions that you have on what works and what doesn't work and all of your time-tested tools.
Right. And speaking of the DVD, this might be an incentive to anyone who would call tonight. My business partner / husband has said that if anybody calls tonight, we might have a little special surprise for them related to the DVD. So we'll see if that might generate any callers.
Oh, we want a caller. Come on, do it. You're
we'll have to see.
Looking at that DVD, you might want to call in. That's funny.
We'll see how that goes. All right, so tonight let's get down to business. We're continuing our series on autism, and we're talking about the big treatment topics associated with treating language delays in toddlers and young preschoolers with autism. Let's review, though, a little bit. And I found this great checklist this afternoon, and I thought, oh, I wish I had used this for tonight's show instead of talking about what we're going to talk about. But we'll use that for next week. I found a great article that really talked about not only the language challenges that children with autism have, but the things that are related to the language challenges. And I just thought it was great, and I want us to talk about that next week. And, Kate, I'll email that to you so that we're on the same page about that. But I thought it was really useful information, and I've written some stuff similar to that on the site, but I just really liked how they had it organized. So we're going to do that next week. But tonight we're talking about echolalia and what that is. It's pretty prevalent in children with autism. One study I read, or one source that I read, said that between 70 and 85% of people with autism exhibit or did exhibit some form of echolalia. So I thought that was a pretty high percentage. I'm not sure that I've seen that in the population of children that we treat, but I think it may just be because we get them so darn early.
Right.
And they move on from us by the time that they're three. But I have had lots of children with echolalia. It is pretty prevalent with kids who are really verbal, who come to us, who are talking, but they're not always using their words. Or they may be great labelers. They may know words for 50 things, but not know how to ask for something that they need. So, again, it's that communicative intent that really determines whether something a child says really is truly communication or not. Does that make sense?
Be sometimes, yeah, it does. I guess I just would point out that can be sometimes something that parents don't necessarily pick up on, because
right.
They say, well, she talks. And I've certainly, and I know on your website you describe a little girl who launched into the birthday song, and
right.
You know, but there didn't have anything to do with the birthday on that particular day. And I've seen kids who walked around and said, ball, chew. You know, they were labeling things, but yet if they wanted the ball, they really didn't look at you and say ball.
Right, and that's a great thing that this article talked about. It really helped, I think, as a looking at it from a parent's perspective, it would really help you analyze the intent of what your child was doing. And one thing that it just said in black and white that I just loved, and I thought, oh boy, why didn't I say this, or why haven't I written it in this way before, is that if your child is just looking at the object and saying choo-choo, and not really looking at you, and not really pointing, and not really getting excited, again, is sharing that excitement with you, really that should not be counted as a truly communicative word. I mean, it's just a word to kind of label it. And so this whole article that I found really was about analyzing the communicative intent, and I thought that was great. And I have kids in therapy, and I know you do too, Kate, that, boy, they are looking at that toy, and they're reaching for their toy, and they are wanting the toy, but they have no idea that they could look at me or look at me and say a word and get it so much faster than if they just kind of kept that vision radar locked on the toy. They do not yet have the big package, the big pragmatic language use skills to be able to know, oh, I've got to somehow get her attention, and she's going to be able to help me do that.
You do have, I know a while back I read on your site, there was a thing about the various functions of language, and that kind of speaks to that. It doesn't, you know,
I know what article you're talking about, and as I was saying, I don't have anything like that on the site. I thought, ooh, there is that article.
No, I think you do, Laura.
I think so, too, now that I'm kind of saying it out loud, but it's called, the name of the article is like Teaching Toddlers the Words They Need to Know to Change Their Worlds, or something like that. And it's under the autism section, but again, I really love how this article that I found today talked about really kind of analyzing communicative intent and looking at all the other things, body language, using your voice to convey meaning, all of those things, and how so many kids with autism struggle with that, not only as toddlers, but those are problems that plague them even as they get older and, you know, live with autism for the rest of their lives. Did you see the Grey's Anatomy a couple of weeks ago when they had the surgeon on with Asperger's?
When she said, it's good because the girl's young and she's only 16 young organs. Yeah, I saw it.
Or when she just really liked her rules. She liked
rules.
You know, I thought that was a pretty fair representation, even though it's a little stereotypical. And I'm sorry if I'm offending anyone with someone older that they love with Asperger's and they think I'm being offensive. That's not my intent. But, you know, it really did let you know that character could talk and she could communicate, but boy, did she still miss a lot of what was going on until the very end, where she kind of slammed, the person who's in charge of mayor,
the Nazi.
Yeah. Why can't we think of her name tonight? What is wrong with us? I'm sure listeners who watch Grey's Anatomy are...
Colin, you'll get something off of the DVD.
But at the end, well, you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So she...
Miranda?
Miranda, yeah. What's her last name, though? I can't think of it.
Hey, I got Miranda. I think
her?
I get something on the DVD.
Guess what, Kate? You will get the very, maybe not the first copy of Listen and Obey Part 1 and Part 2, because that will go to my mother, but
oh, okay.
The second copy. How about that? That'll be
That's
your
fair.
Freebie for knowing
I'll
Miranda.
I'll take that. Miranda.
But anyway, at the end, this is my point. It's taking me 2 minutes to get here. The surgeon, you know, that had Asperger's said, you know, I don't always understand the meaning behind what somebody's saying. I'm very literal. But after a while, I think that I've understood that you're making fun of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she probably, you know, of course, said it much better than I there. I'm paraphrasing. But that my point is, you know, she could talk and she was smart, but boy, did she miss all the other things that go into communicating. And so that's what children, even as toddlers, we start to see that with children with autism. They don't understand so many of those unwritten rules that people with typically developing language just kind of learn on their own. So that's something we're going to be talking about that next week. But tonight,
kind of the flip side of that, Laura,
yeah.
is those kids who have no words but yet manage to communicate pretty much everything they want to because they are really, really good at looking at mommy and pointing to things and, you know, somehow without one word they manage to communicate all kinds of things because they have
the pragmatic
part down to a T but yet don't have the words. So.
Right.
And those
would not be children with autism. They may not.
Nope.
They may be late talkers because of another reason, but not kids with autism. Because this is a big thing. Kids with autism really miss all that nonverbal stuff. So again, we're going to talk about a lot of that next week. But tonight, you know, now that we're 12 minutes into the show, let's get started with what we're talking about. You know, we're talking about echolalia. And again, have we said what that is yet?
Not really. No.
Okay. Echolalia is a characteristic that sometimes children and even adults with autism have, and it's repeating what you've heard someone say. And it can be kind of in two different forms. It can be immediate echolalia. It can be immediate echolalia. It can be immediate echolalia, where you say the same thing that you just heard somebody say over and over and over. And again, I'm not meaning to offend anybody. I'm just kind of in a giddy mood tonight, who knows why. So that's what that is. It can be immediate where, like, if I might ask a child, what's your name? And instead of replying, Dylan, you know, he repeats, what's your name? So that would be an example of a child who is exhibiting immediate echolalia. And then you can have children, and often in the same child, have both immediate and delayed echolalia, which means that you repeat something that you've heard someone say. It can also be like my little girl that you referred to earlier who could sing entire songs that she had heard someone sing. There's some real cute clips of her on YouTube right now that she sings Happy Birthday in like six different languages.
Oh, no.
So that's her real strength.
Yeah.
She's very fluent. I mean, she can really hear it and say it and hear it and sing it, you know, but process what she's saying, not necessarily. She's gotten a lot better, and I don't see her anymore because she's older. She's turning 5 in January, but she that's where her special skills are. But again, when I met her when she was 2, she could sing that whole darn thing. She could say lots of words, but she could not communicate with her parents. She could not ask for things that she needed. She could not answer a question. She really couldn't even follow directions, which was a big mystery to her parents, why she could say shoes and why she could point out shoes in the catalogs and point out shoes in books and say shoes when she saw her shoes, yet she couldn't understand go put your shoes on, and she certainly couldn't ask for shoes if she needed to initiate that as a request. So, again, sometimes that parents really miss that, back to your point earlier, because their kids are talking, but they miss that they're not really using words to communicate with others.
It is. I am at a loss to come up with a nicer name other than, like, funky thing. You know, it is kind of a bizarre thing that a child
atypical
might label. Yes, it is. And it would be easy to assume. It's more obvious when you're saying, do you want to play choo-choos or cars? And they say, do you want to play choo-choos or cars? And they're not grabbing one or pointing to one, or, you know, you kind of maybe get, oh, they don't understand it. But to have a child walk around and label things, but yet not ever use the word in order to request it, or, you know, it would be easy to miss. They're really not communicating as they're labeling. They're just going around pointing to things or labeling things. But it's kind of an interesting thing, that echolalia, I think.
It is, you know, and it is, sometimes parents think about it just as an expressive problem, like he doesn't know what to say, so he repeats, and sometimes that is part of it. But really it indicates that there's an underlying difficulty processing or understanding language. And so I think about echolalia as both a receptive language problem and an expressive language problem. And we can look at cases where a child is using echolalia and know, okay, he doesn't know what this means, so we have to teach him not only what to say in response to that or how to answer a question or whatever, but back up before that and teach him what the concepts are and really kind of help him learn to understand and process what we've said before we expect him to know how to kind of spit out the right answer to a question that we've asked or, again, even make a choice. Sometimes, like you were talking about, when you give a kid a choice, you know, especially right at the beginning, we're going in to see a new kid, you know, for an evaluation, and we get information on them, you know, biographical information and kind of what the family's concerns are. And because we are treatment therapists, for lack of a better word, the people who actually provide direct treatment, we're not just assessors or evaluators. You know, we have the benefit of getting their reports. Sometimes the reports we get don't really, you know, I get there with a kid, and you complain about this all the time. It doesn't even seem like I've
heard about it. I do not. Thank you for putting that down so people can listen to that.
But, I mean, you see it, too, where we read a report about a kid, but it might not be the total picture. And so when we get there, and my, you know, again, I'm taking 2 or 3 minutes to get to my point, we don't really know that much about the kid. And so we walk in, and, you know, he starts maybe kind of digging through our bag and wanting to play with toys. And so we automatically pull out two things, you know, that we want to play with. And, you know, this is like your example. Do you want to play with choo-choos or bubbles? And he says, do you want to play with choo-choos or bubbles? Or, you know, and he may just totally be looking around the room or still digging through the bag and not, again, no clue that he's processing it with looking at it or reaching for it or anything. And so that's when we know, oh, my gosh, this isn't just, you know, an expressive language kid. This isn't just a late talker. This is a kid who has those really basic foundational receptive language skills are not there, and we have to back up and teach that. I think when I originally started giving that example, I was going to sum it up with another word, but or take that in a different direction, but I can't remember, so maybe I'll...
Well, you think about a minute. I want to go on record because you make a nice point of this in your, on your article about echolalia on your website, Laura, that although it can be kind of a red flag for, gee, is there some spectrum behavior here, or is this a processing issue? Is he really understanding? On the other hand, the fact that a child is talking is a good thing. I mean, you know, we mean to say that echolalia is terrible, and, you know, we do. It does tell us that somewhere in there is the capacity to be communicative verbally, and that's a good sign. And it's not necessarily, you know, I think that's because sometimes we beat ourselves up after the shows because we say we never said, you know, the good side, the positive. And really it can be. I mean, you do have to think on some level, well, his prognosis may be better than the child who doesn't seem to understand what I'm saying and uses no words at all. Because we know on some level words are in there. They might not be real functional or real communicative, but they're in there. So that's good.
The physical capacity to talk.
Right.
You know, the air is coming up from the lungs. It's vibrating over the vocal folds. His mouth is moving. We understand him. You know, all those, there are really good indicators. I think in the article I said it's the silver lining. Yes,
right.
It's not perfect. And, yes, we have some ways to go with both receptive language and expressive language. But he is talking, and that is always a very, very good thing. It does mean that he's going to probably end up to be a functional communicator. So good. I'm glad you brought that up.
Throw back to last week. Those are some of the kids that I've had good luck on using pictures initially, where they have words, but they're not necessarily communicative with the words. And they tend to be really, really visual kids.
Right.
I've used pictures early on with some of those kids, and wow, once they get it, those words mean that thing? They can really, really, you know, that can be a really nice, easy way for those kids who are verbal yet not particularly communicative with using those words. Pictures have been real successful. I think I mentioned that last week. But anyway, did you ever come up with that point you were trying to?
No, it's completely gone, but that's okay.
Okay.
It may come back at some point. But what you just said, too, because he is about a kid like that, they begin to assign meaning to what they're saying, and then they also get that whole intent piece because it's something very concrete. Oh, I pick up the picture and I hand it to her, and then I get what's on the picture. I get that word. And so, again, it makes language, which is sometimes very abstract, you know, and when I was in school, I would think, what really makes the word milk mean that white stuff that's in the carton? You know, it's just a random set of sounds that someone a long time ago threw together, and, you know, years and years and years and years and years later, we're still using that same, you know, combination of M-I-L-K to mean milk. It's very abstract to some kids, and that's what parents don't get. They don't get, how could he not understand that it's milk? How can he even be saying it but still not understand it? And, again, that is a hard concept to really kind of wrap your arms around and understand, but it does happen with some kids. Okay, let me also say something that I get questions about on the website all the time. Echolalia really can be a part of normal language development, and let me put a big disclaimer on there, but when I think about echolalia, I'm not thinking of a child who is kind of in that 19 phase who really starts to repeat everything you say. I never think about those kids as echolalic and would never call a kid in that huge imitative phase echolalic. To me, it's different. You know, I really only use that term when I'm referring to a child who is really repeating things that are out of context, things that seem to make no sense with what's going on around them. The case of, you know, a kid who might quote the Disney movie or launch into something that's totally, you know, for lack of a better word, like you said before, funky or weird or out there. You know, that's the only time that I really use the term echolalic. But I get questions from parents who say that, you know, but isn't repeating a normal part of language development? And I always want to say yes, but. I mean, don't you think about it that way, Kate?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For a toddler that age, that's fairly typical, no big deal.
And we want them to do that.
Probably a good thing. That's how they learn to talk. But, yeah, I've had kids, and I know you have too, Laura, that they really didn't use any words or maybe two or three words to communicate, and yet they could launch into a whole verse from their favorite show or, you know, a whole arsenal of songs that, and, you know, that's kind of peculiar if they can sing a whole song or they can go into the whole exchange of the Dora, the Diego show, whatever, but yet they don't really use any words with mom and dad or you or anybody else. I mean, that's... That's a different thing, yeah.
Right, it's totally different, and it is different mm-hmm. from that great imitation that we do want. The other thing about kids with autism that exhibit echolalia is that the phase, the repeating phase, and kind of the fascination with that lasts for a lot longer. They almost seem to get stuck in that phase, and the thing is they don't really replace any of that just really repetitive language with lots of new words. And that's how it differentiates from normal language development and from where you, you know, and I remember when my kids were little and, you know, they were in that phase and, you know, that's when my husband and I would be really careful about what we said around them, you know, not to cuss or, you know, say anything that we want them to repeat because they just repeated everything. But, you know, that repetition really did decrease as they became more spontaneous and had more words that they said on their own. And that's the real differentiating factor with me as well, is how much of a child's, how many of his utterances in an hour were really something that he said on his own versus something that he repeated. So that's kind of another clue that lets you know, too. If they're hanging on to just that imitated thing for a long, long, long time and don't really replace words with things, you know, again, that they initiate on their own, that lets you know that it's kind of out of the ordinary, too. All right. Let's see. Oh, I did want to say one thing. Children with motor planning issues or apraxia sometimes get stuck in what looks like echolalia. But I think, and again, this is based on my personal experience and kind of a combination of the reading and the research that I've done with that, is they haven't been able to imitate, and then they learn to imitate, and boy, do they only want to imitate at that point. And it's kind of like a new skill that you practice, practice, practice. And it's, sometimes kids with motor planning issues can look a little bit echolalic because, again, it's the imitation is a new skill, so they're going to try to imitate a lot just to kind of prove they can do it or get their kicks out of it or rehearse it enough so that they kind of store that little word in their brain so that they can say it again and again and again when they need it. But I have also had parents with children with apraxia talk to me about that as well. I don't know if you've had that experience, Kate.
Some. I always kind of feel like, and here I am again saying it live, you know, apraxic kids, once they get that imitation piece, which can be really hard for apraxic kids to get,
right.
Then they almost kind of become overly reliant on it, and they can do it, and it makes it easier the way it does
right.
for a young toddler, so they continue to do it.
Yes.
Yeah, but it does look different. I don't know how to really qualify exactly how it looks different, but it does, yeah.
I know, and that's what I try to explain to parents. And then, you know, it's so hard when it's not, you know, when it's somebody that sent me an email or something and we're just communicating, and I can't just sit there and, you know, I'm not in their living room like with a kid that I would see and be able to say, okay, this is why it's not echolalia.
Yeah.
This is what makes this different. But that's hard to do when it's, you know, with a kid that you've never even met.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. The other thing I wanted to say about echolalia is sometimes kids not only echo the word, but they also echo the exact tone that the person uses. They may even go as far as the facial expression, the volume. I mean, some of my kids, they'll go, ooh, look, and I think, oh, they're doing me.
Yeah.
Doing Laura right there. That was pretty good. Or, wow. We have a little guy that's kind of stuck on that now.
Yeah.
You know, and they do it in the same way almost every time they say it. And a child like that has learned not only the word, but they process the whole experience as one thing. You know, they've got the inflection right. They've, you know, I'm so Southern, and, you know, they even have my really horrible, long, drawn-out, diphthongized vowels. You know, they the whole thing. A little guy that we had last year, little Joseph, he would laugh like you all the time. And I would think, he's doing Kate. You know, so they copy the whole thing.
That's funny. I was thinking, I don't laugh like that. No, I knew he was doing me.
And we talked about it, yeah.
Oh, no, it is me. Oh, no. I've had a couple kids do that. Yeah. sometimes they do kind of exaggerate what you do, but you don't. You do definitely see, oh, yeah.
Ooh,
and that sing-songy, high-pitched voice. You know, we end up with little boys sometimes. They would say, oh, my, look at that. And we're like,
ooh. Ooh, pull that back a little bit, yeah.
He's gotten a little too good at that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of cute, but sometimes it's a little...
Yeah, go ahead. Are you going to tell a story?
No, I'm done. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I have a little guy on my caseload now that I talk about all the time that I just adore. His name is Jack. And he will, when he's about to do something that he's not supposed to do, he doesn't really do it anymore now, but he would for a minute go, no, no, Jack, just like his mom would. And it was that's his way of kind of, he processed the whole thing as one, like I can't reach over and do this because I know I'm going to get in trouble. And what does my mom say to me when I'm in trouble? No, no, Jack. Do it the same way every time. So that's another way that you know that it's probably an echolalic utterance versus just kind of a normal imitated utterance when they've got that whole imitation down pat, you know, every single...
Okay, I can tap that. I had a child a few years ago, and she really was nonverbal. I mean, she really didn't use any words to communicate. By the end, occasionally I'd hear a word, occasionally. But she would sing the Chipmunk Christmas song.
Wow.
I'll be home for the whole song.
Wow.
Standing about 3 inches from the TV singing it. Like, oh, boy, talk about good imitation skills. She was the master.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you read about echolalia, they say sometimes echolalia serves a purpose. Sometimes the purpose is the kid just gets a big kick out of it. You know, that's their stem that we talked about. You know, we've used that word before. Their thing that they do over and over and over because it gives their, somehow they're getting some really positive benefit from it. And some kids with echolalia have these little verbal stems, you know, but something they do. I have a little girl that I don't see very often anymore. I came in right as she was turning 3, and I've seen her a few times after 3, but I'm not her primary therapist anymore. But she, when she's reminded of something that's happened in a previous session, or like if she sees a cat, she'll kind of replay a little conversation that she's had with a grandmother, you know, at some point about a cat. Or, you know, that's how she lets you know, or how she, you know, kind of rehearses or restates her memories. You know, she comes up with the conversation that she's had about that in the past. And it's bizarre when you hear it, because unless her mother's there to kind of give me the context, sometimes I don't have any clue what she's talking about, and I have to really kind of look around the room to think, what's that coming from? And so you do kind of, you know, use your detective skills a little bit. Last year we had a little guy that, do you remember this? He... For Santa, he called him, it's Santa.
Oh,
because
yeah.
The first time his mom showed him Santa, she said, it's Santa. And so if you were saying to him, you know, his name, who's this? It's Santa was correct. But if you said, what do you want to play today? And he said, it's Santa. It sounded very out of place. And that's where you think, oh, he lifted that whole little phrase as his label for Santa Claus rather than Santa. He didn't understand that it wasn't part of Santa's name.
I had one. Are we telling all of our stories?
Tell one of the stories, then we're going to move on.
Okay, I had a little guy, and he was a very picky eater and really only ate a handful of things. One of them was a particular kind of cracker. But he really only said one thing when he wanted a snack, and that was, I want a cookie. But he wouldn't eat any cookies. And he would only eat this kind of cracker. But over time, I came to learn that he really liked cheese balls. But when I'd have the cheese balls out, trying to get him to request a cheese ball, he'd say, I want a cookie. And I
said, you know, one long
I want my snack, please. It was just, I want cookie. But he wouldn't eat a cookie to save his soul. You know, he no way.
But
finally, at the end, I could say, what do you want? A cookie? And then finally he got, I want cheese ball.
Yeah. But it was one long thing of information. He did not really know I want cheese balls were separate words. He learned that all is one thing together. Yeah. And that's called,
Gestalt.
There it is. Good. That's called that kind of learning, and they learn that as kids who are echolalic generally are these kinds of learners, and they process chunks of information, not individual words or concepts. Again, they lump it all together, and that just tells you about their learning style. So, again, when you're a therapist working with a kid like this or a parent, you have to be so careful what language you model or how you teach a concept, because you teach it wrong or you do something that's like, it's Santa. My goodness, that stays with that kid for a long, long time. So it makes you analyze every single thing that you're doing.
I certainly make that mistake now and again. I think, oh, I wish I hadn't presented it that way.
Me too.
That way. Uh-huh.
And then I try to back it up and then work myself into a frenzy trying to kind of retract when I think, gosh, I wish I had just been thinking on my feet a little bit more before I introduce that whole thing. Let's move on to start to talk about treatment. And this little point actually is probably in the explanation article. Let me find it. Echolalia. Again, these are from the articles that we're mostly talking about tonight are from my website, teachmetotalk.com. And, you know, the first one is echolalia, what it is, and the second one is echolalia, what to do about it. Oh, it is in the what it is article. The explanation article is, you know, when we have a kid with echolalia, again, with kids with autism, it is kind of a positive indicator that they're going to learn to talk. And it also gives you a real clue as to what they don't understand and what we need to back up and try to teach them receptively, too. So I always try to look at echolalia as an opportunity for me to, you know, I've got to get a little peek into that brain and see how it's working, because it lets me know, oh, he doesn't really know that concept, or he doesn't have a word for that yet, or he doesn't have a way to ask for what that is yet or express maybe a feeling. So it gives you an idea of what you need to teach. So that's how I wanted to pull that all together. And I think that was probably the point that I was trying to make 20 minutes ago when I couldn't remember what that point was. Okay, let's move on a minute with the treatment, too. You're going to look at what, when a kid is being echolalic or using that kind of repetitive utterance, you want to try to see if the echolalia has a purpose or not, and we've already talked about sometimes it's non-purposeful. They're just quoting Dora because they like quoting Dora, or they like quoting the whole, or they like singing a particular song. Excuse me. Sometimes the purpose is, oh, I'm so sorry. Sometimes the purpose is that, or again, I guess this would be a non-purposeful way to use an echolalic utterance, but it does kind of, it's caused because the kid is maybe overtired or stressed or hungry, or in some way his little system is compromised, so he's going to be more likely to do his atypical things at that point, just like if he were a spinner or a kid that really kind of had a stem in some other kind of way. Kids with echolalia, again, sometimes those are verbal stems, and so they might lapse into their whole echolalic things when some other stressor has happened. I may not be communicating that very well. Kate, jump in and help me explain that a little bit better. Kate? Hello? Hello?
Lara?
Are you there?
I can hear you.
I can hear you now. I wonder what happened. I wonder if we're having some tech. Did you hear my whole little rant about that?
Yeah.
Did you hear what I said? Okay. I wonder if I just couldn't hear you for a minute. I felt like I jumped up to see if I needed to get another phone.
I heard you the whole time. I don't know.
Okay. Were you talking back to me and I couldn't hear you?
I was. I was trying to, yes. I was saying, yeah, I'm here. I guess, you know, to the extent, I don't know if this is exactly what you were trying to say, but you did say something about how some kids use them almost as a stimmy thing, you know, that,
right,
that
yeah.
for whatever reason is pleasant or comforting or whatever, the same reason they use other self-stimming behaviors. But if you look at it in that light, it would make sense that when their system is compromised, when they're really tired or sick or whatever, you know, it would be logical to assume that they're going to engage in more of those kind of stimmy behaviors because for whatever reason they are a little off. So
right,
it
yeah.
kind of makes sense that when they're a little off, don't be surprised if you see more of the echolalia come out because they're not quite as with you as they would have been, just the way that when we're sick or really tired or whatever, we're kind of off too. So
right, absolutely. Okay, other non-purposeful kinds of echolalia could be, and this would really probably refer to older kids. I have had a kid or two do this from time to time, but it's not something I see all the time. They may be echolalic to be used as kind of a self-direction for their own actions. That might be a kid who has to say, like if he's going to wash his hands, turn on the water, get some soap, rinse my hands. You know, they have to kind of do that verbal repetition of what they're supposed to do to be able to get through a routine. And, again, I think we would probably see that more as children were older.
Right. Well, to some extent, that no, Jack. I mean, he was
yeah.
kind of doing some of that. He
yeah.
was telling himself,
right.
you're going to get it for that. You know,
yeah.
that's not something you're supposed to do.
This is what Mommy would say.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and the thing we were talking about, too, like when a kid is stressed or sick or hungry, really some kids when they're anxious or when their sensory systems have been like, you know, say they hate the sound of the vacuum or they're out, you know, maybe shopping with their parents and it's just too overwhelming, that's maybe when they would lapse into some of that too because, again, their little systems have been assaulted and that's comforting or, you know, relieves stress for some way in their little bodies and minds. Okay, let's talk about some of the communicative purposes for echolalia. And again, it could be that a kid might not know how he's supposed to start a conversation. So he might say, do you want a cookie? Because that would be what his mom asks him. And he doesn't know how to walk up and say, you know, I want a cookie or I'm hungry. So that might be how he does that. Your little example was like that. A kid may not be able to... that's sort of the same thing. Oh, he may not know how to say yes or no. And so, again, he asks the question instead of responding. And we've kind of talked about that, you know, where kids answer with the same question, do you want to go swing? And this kind of brings us to what you can do treatment-wise. We'll skip on to that because I think we only have a little over 15 minutes left. So let's... You know, we're doing what we hate when somebody does a show about what something is and then they don't ever explain what to do about it.
Right.
Right. I'm glad I heard you say right. I was starting to think you were gone again.
No, I'm going to respond, so you know I'm here.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So one thing, and this reminds me of a little guy that I know named Connor, and I treated him when he was between 2 and 3 and a little bit after, and then I got to see him later because I also saw his brother, who was not on the spectrum. He was just a late talker, just needed a jump start. But one thing that was the best trick, and his mother always would tell me this. She would say, the best trick you ever taught me in speech therapy with Connor is to give him a choice with yes or no. Do you want ice cream, yes or no? And when we started that technique with him, because he would just repeat ice cream, you know, if he wanted it, he got this look over his face like, I know the answer to that. Because, you know, when we did the yes or no, that part was there. And he was far enough along to be able to pick yes or no reliably when we gave him some cues, you know, like shaking her head yes or shaking her head no. And, you know, he kind of got that. But that was just a total kind of relief for that whole family because it wasn't as, you know, didn't drive the mom crazy because he wasn't repeating the last word of every choice anymore. He really, you know, it was like to him, oh, it's such a relief. I know what you want me to say. You want me to either say yes or no. So that's a strategy that you could use. The main thing that we talk about in the article, Echolalia, what to do about it, again, is to model everything like we want the kid to say. And this is so hard for me. I screw this up in treatment all the time. because kids that are echolalic really do, you know, imitate just what you said. So like when a mom would say to a kid, you want me to hold you? What do they say? They don't say hold me. They say hold you, you know, when they're initiating that. So one thing that I try to teach parents and remind myself about is to model things just like the kid would say it. So instead of asking lots of questions or giving, even given the choices, we're really in the initial phases of treatment going to model language from his point of view. And that would mean, too, that we model with words and phrases that he can imitate and understand and make sense. And that's why narrating play with a child who's echolalic makes more sense than any other treatment strategy that you could do. And, again, some parents get all blown out about this because they say, well, I want him to learn how to answer questions, and I want him to be able to participate in conversation. And my response is, yeah, I do, too, but we're not there yet. We've just got to, again, narrate what we want him to say so that when he lifts those whole little phrases from our play or our conversations with him, that it actually makes sense and doesn't make him sound so atypical when he uses those. Are you there?
I'm here. Okay. I don't know what to add to that.
Okay. All right. I'm just going to keep going down this list then.
Keep going.
Okay. That was the first one, model language from your child's point of view. And to that note, you need to provide words, even if you're not crazy about what those words are. You know, I have had some parents not really want me to teach what I call power words, like mine, stop, don't do it, you know, because they think, oh, those are so negative and those are so nasty. But I'd much rather have a kid use words than biting or hitting or an all-out fit when he is wanting to refuse something. And protesting and refusing are always more pleasant when they're done with words, even if they're said, you know, with that nasty no tone than, you know, if they had no words at all. So, again, you want to teach with words that he can actually use in conversation. Okay.
And although not pleasant, they are certainly very typical.
Oh, yeah.
Mine
yeah.
and no are need to be said, whether we like to hear them as parents or not. They definitely will use them and should use them. So.
Yeah, and again, I'd rather much rather hear that than a kid have a kid, you know, wrestle me down for a toy when he could have just said mine and I would have given it to him.
Right.
And same thing with another, you know, with another 2-year-old or 3-year-old, they're going to, even a peer will respond, you know, they're going to have their normal little tiffs and their territorial little arguments. But again, kids are often always going to respond better to words than they would than if your child didn't have a word and just use aggression to communicate his message. You know, with kids that are echolalic, they often love to read books because they're so highly visual. And if you've listened to the show before, you know that Kate and I really don't use flashcards and books with kids because playing is so much better than looking at a picture. But with kids like this, they do like those kinds of things, so you can really use that to your advantage. And what you need to do is, if he doesn't name pictures that you're naming, instead of pointing to the picture and always going, what's that, what's that, what's that, what's that, you know, I have had some kids that's how they want to read the book because that's how their mom does it. You really just label the picture and then say a short little phrase about it rather than constantly, what's that, what's that, what's that, because we have had some, I don't know if we've shared kids like that, Kate. I can't remember anybody that we would have shared that have done that, but I have had kids that's how they read a book. They do the what's that, what's that, what's that.
I don't know that I have so much. I always encourage parents to try and make books more playful and social.
Right.
So that it's not all just point, 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 label, label, label. And, you know, these are kids more likely going to like books. I guess that's more appropriate for kids. And we certainly see those, too, who do not like books at all.
Right.
But even with kids who are on the spectrum, you know, pretend that you're putting the hat on the characters in the book. Pretend that you're wiping their noses or wiping their feet or whatever, giving them
or
a cookie.
Patting
or
them or mm-hmm. kissing them mm-hmm. or anything that's going to make it a little bit more interactive. And, again, that's a great way to teach action words and verbs that, you know, you're kind of extending that receptive vocabulary when you're doing that too, so that if you're reading a book about farm animals, you're saying, ooh, let's pet the horse, and oh, can you give the cow a kiss, and, you know, all those little things too. So that's another little tip. The next treatment strategy or thing for you to do at home with is don't ask your child a lot of questions. We sort of talked about this. You know, you probably don't want to start a lot of your questions as do you want blah, blah, or blah, blah, because he is going to also imitate the do you want. One strategy that you could do instead of that is when he's reaching for an object, you just say the item's name or model. You know, I want the truck, so that he is going to, again, say that whole little phrase after you or lift that whole part. And if you've already messed that up, which I do all the time with echolalic kids, you need to model his name as you would give it to him, such as, you know, Landon wants the truck or car. And if he is saying, like, if he somehow messed that up and would ask me, you know, do you want the car? I always try to treat that like it's a question that he intentionally asked me. And I'll say, no, Laura doesn't want the car, but Brandon wants the car, and really, you know, start to use names too. And that's another tip that you can do too with kids that are echolalic. They have huge struggles with understanding pronouns. So you may want to replace all those pronouns, the I's, the you's, the me, and the mine, with names for a while until they're really ready to move on and use those pronouns. Okay. One expert suggests kind of a fill-in-the-blank format for teaching requests with those kinds of kids. I want the, and then just really pause so that they can fill in that blank, because oftentimes they're really great labelers, and so they probably know the name of the object. We're just trying to teach requesting with the, or manding, as the autism people would say, with that same word. And again, I mess this up all the time, is really watching your tone of voice so that you're not presenting that question inflection again all the time at the ends of sentences. Have you had kids do that, Kate, where they really kind of screw that up and they almost all their sentences end with that question, that rise in prosody, so you don't want to do that?
Well, yes, I have.
Maybe not. You might be better with echolalia, though.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, it is hard, though, because even when we were filming Teach Me to Listen and Obey, one of my friend that I talk about all the time, Jack, is in that DVD, and there are some parts of it that I just got so flustered with, you know, not even following my own treatment advice and treatment techniques, that, you know, I won't even show, because, again, I do this all day, every day, and it's still pretty darn easy for me to mess this up. So if you're a parent or a new therapist listening to this, you know, sometimes these recommendations are easier said than done, and you're just going to have to do them until they become second nature to you. We've already talked about this, but you do want to stop asking lots of questions. You know, do you need some help? Should I hold you? Again, you're going to model just what your child should say in those situations. Oh, and this number five suggestion, be careful how you respond to requests. If you are saying, and this, again, is from a real-life experience that I've had, if you are saying okay, like habitually after a request, your child may also incorporate that as part of the script, like, help you? Okay. And so then, again, they've echoed just these little things that we say and don't even mean. We don't even really realize we're saying. One other thing that I've learned the hard way is to avoid using a child's name, like with praise. My little Jack really got stuck on, good job, Jack, for a long time, and that really made him stand out at preschool because we didn't stop that soon enough with him. So you want to avoid that kind of praise, because, you know, he would do something and then, you know, all of our kids become praise junkies when they're in therapy. You know, they think every little word, somebody's going to clap and we're all going to go, yay! yay.
Wonder what gave him that idea.
I know. So, but our, you know, my little guy really said, good job, Jack. And I noticed it some at home, but it really stuck out to me when I went to preschool. And he, you know, he was really saying it a lot. So, again, the yay would be better in that situation, you know, or if he, we really taught him to say, I did it. Because he still needed that little verbal boost at the end, and it sounded a lot more typical than good job, Jack. With greeting or closings, haven't you had kids that if you're saying, you say bye-bye to them and say their names,
oh,
and they repeat
yeah.
their names? Yeah.
A lot. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you want to, again, don't use their name when you're doing that. You might just want to adopt a big hi, which I do now all the time, or bye or bye-bye instead of our little friend Laylee used to do that. Do you remember little Laylee? Kate?
Oh, yeah.
Say bye-bye, Laylee,
mm-hmm.
A lot when I would say. I remember that with her a lot. Again, when your child is echoing, you want to look at that as an opportunity to teach him what he needs to know, model the way that he should say it, and then wait. And the last tip, I think that we've already discussed in the first part of our show tonight, is that echolalia most often happens when his system is overstimulated. That's that he's used too many words, he's tired, he's hungry, he's scared. Sometimes kids even lapse into echolalia when they're really, really bored, which is what my Lily would do too. She would just kind of walk around her house and quote her favorite shows or sing a song, you know, that's the time too. And I would tell her mom, okay, that means she needs something to do right now. You've got to give her a job. So if you're washing dishes and she's lapsing into that, call her over here and have her, you know, grab a paper towel and have her put it in the trash, or, you know, she's telling you she needs some kind of stimulation right now. So that's, again, look at when your child is using, or a child that you're seeing is in therapy is using echolalia, and try to figure out, why is this happening? How can I teach that? Or what can I do to kind of break that cycle? You know, and professionals did used to try to eliminate echolalia. And I even earlier in my career, I would say, no, don't say that. So what would kids say back to me? No, don't say that. So you have to, again, really look at why a kid's doing it and make sure that you are not making it worse by modeling things that it's going to sound weird when he echoes you or when he repeats what you've said. All right. I think that's it. I think I've gotten through all these points about echolalia. Kate, is there anything you want to add to wrap it up?
We did not get our caller. They're not going to get
there.
That's
going to make me sad.
They are perk on their CD.
Oh, you know, I do think most of our listeners listen at another time,
reported.
6 o'clock. Yeah, they listen from Blog Talk Radio or from the website, which is fine, and I don't want them to stop listening. And 6 o'clock Thursday night works great for us because that's when we're wrapping up our week, but maybe not for moms of toddlers who are having dinner and trying to wrestle kids to, carpool kids to gymnastics, and maybe they have older children who are doing homework. So, again, that's all right.
Well, anything else about echolalia? It can be a hard thing to fix. Let's put that on note. I mean, not fix, but to lessen
replace.
The significance or replace. Yeah, because sometimes they do get, you like the term, and I guess I like it as well, so locked into a certain pattern, a certain thing that they say and say and say and say. It can take a long time to replace it.
Yeah, it can. And you just have to kind of hang in there and know this too shall pass. It may be 2 or 3 years. some children end up, you know, not end up, but some children persist with echolalia for even through their childhoods. My mom has recently told me about a woman at her church who does that. And she said, you know, I know there's something wrong with her. And, you know, I've known before that, you know, she was probably developmentally delayed, But I didn't really realize what that was until we've been, you know, I always talk to her about what we're going to do, and she reads the stuff on the website, and she said I didn't really realize the name for it, but I would get so irritated with her when she would come up behind me at church and repeat just what I've said. You know, so I tried to say, oh, she just doesn't know what to say. That's kind of her way of jumping in the conversation, is to repeat what you've said so that you'll talk back to her, or that, you know, you'll include her in that conversation. So, again, it can even persist a lifetime, but don't get scared that that's necessarily going to happen with, you know, any one particular child. You just have to kind of work through it and see what's going to happen.
And with all,
right,
the things that we talk about, the earlier you address it, the more you recognize it's the you know, something you're dealing with or your child's dealing with, the more likely it is that you'll have a nice outcome with it. So.
Sure, absolutely. And again, if they're 2 and 3 and doing this, woohoo, they're talking. Again,
right.
That's the silver lining. Some children with autism don't learn to communicate, but you know that your child has the physical capability to be able to talk, and on some level, he knows how to, again, produce those words. It may not be to initiate a conversation. It may not be to request. But some, you know, that's your end. That's how you know, yes, I've got a way in here. He does have more chance to be able to communicate than not to communicate if he is able to repeat those things that he's heard. So look at it that way as a positive thing. Okay, next week we are going to talk about all of the other kind of language, pragmatic language, or the things that go with language that aren't necessarily about the words, the nonverbal stuff that kids with autism often have challenges with. So I'm really excited about that show next week. And I guess on that note, we'll just wrap it up for tonight.
Sounds great.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.